interesting reading. So just like your wonderful job, which I'd love to find online, where your PowerPoint walked everybody back through the timeline.
Okay.
You know, so new people could get caught up with what's happened when. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd love to be able to see that, because I'm still, what happened first? And I'd like to go back and consult that. So these DOT records should form some of that same historical archive, right? What's been asked and answered at different times. And so those two things are around, and I'll get them posted up to share. And the one little trivia, which I would like feedback from the group at some point in terms of how to proceed, but it's like being in a room and everybody's saying black and you're going, no, that dress is gold, not white, you know? So I don't know if it matters to anybody in the corporation or at town hall, but it's true. The language for truck routes is a may, not a shall. And the reason why that's true is that for whatever reason, as you look over the correspondence with the DOT, the city seems to always come to the conclusion that this A, DOT's got something to do with it, and B, that it's a complicated thing with your neighboring municipalities. So it is if you want one. But I would argue that nobody seriously looked at the option to just get rid of it, get it down, take the signs down. So it doesn't drive GPS logistics, because it's up there, it will get incorporated, right? Now you're forcing trucks to go instead of spreading out. But even if you don't think that's going to happen, at least the truck route's gone. So when you want to baseline, where would the trucks really be going and what's the best way to get them there? You're looking at an environment where you haven't already meddled with it, and meddled with it in a way that you know doesn't work. So strip it, get rid of it, and then see what you've got. But I don't know if there's any appetite to pursue that. I think it's a nice place to start myself, because I don't think origination and destination are necessarily the critical factors for getting the trucks the best way to where they need to go and not bug is the maximum number of people, right? So between breaking it down, I think I've said this before, but breaking that problem down into little bits is, I believe, our best path to success. And getting rid of the truck route altogether may, in fact, be one of those small things that we do that has a ripple on effect. So anyway, that's not in the agenda, but there's my little one-man committee report.
You're doing lots of research already.
Great. Yeah. Well, no, this is actually what Nick knew he was probably going to get as a start with me. Now, what we do with all that information and how we use it to best advantage for the community, that's another thing. But I'm at least arranging all the basic information and facts. My mapping's coming along, and I've been doing some took the 3-day course that DEC just had on wetlands. So that brought me up to speed a little bit more about what happens when you try to do work in the bays. Anyway, that's the rookie report.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Susie.
I love your optimism in general. That's just the way you started this, is turn this day around.
Did Bob sort it out yet, or is he on his way to the
end? Coming on right now.
Oh, good. Okay.
Cool. And Bob is here, but before we go, Paul, just FYI, I made you co-host of the meeting, so when we get to the later part where it's compensation, I'll give you control so I can step out and you guys can...
Fine. Okay.
Okay. My apologies. Missed last month, and I'm late to this one. Some kind of device
this
problem.
This meeting is being recorded.
Brenda, do we have a quorum in the room right now?
Sure do.
Good. So, belatedly, we'll call the May meeting of the Hudson Development Corporation to order. Before we get underway here, a few remarks, if you will.
Oh, God.
I think the byword for today's meeting is decision. decisions that have been perhaps delayed, considered and put aside, but we're now on the brink of a major decision. And as I looked at my notes for the meeting, I see that it's not just the one that sits in front of us, the elephant in the room of the CAS project, but there's half a dozen things like this sitting in front of us right now. A bit of research says that the definition for decision is pretty simple. It's a conclusion or resolution reached after consideration. Now, we all do this every single day, and some of these are life-changing things, and some of them are simple as, am I going to put fish or meat on the grill? Well, we're about to do some life-changing things for the city of Hudson, for the Hudson River, for all the people in our community here, and for businesses and for jobs. No small part of our discussions today is going to center around real estate. We've been dancing around some of these things for quite some time. We have accomplished a couple of things. We'll announce closing of a sale on a parcel today. But now there's a lot of other things in front of us on the real estate decision tree. Setting that aside, the result of these decisions is going to change the role of this corporation dramatically. We are going to get to look at our purpose, which doesn't include real estate, and look at economic and job development. So today, as your chairman, I'm announcing the formation of a program committee, looking forward to a well-funded organization that can focus on job development, economic outlook for the city. I plan to reach out to the Hudson Business Coalition in the Columbia County Chamber of Commerce and gather a group of people, including board members here, but not exclusive to that. We need to cast a wider net on this. Certainly, I'm not the only one that has experienced going out to eat and a shortage of staff in the restaurant, a waiter apologizing, we can't find help here. We have initially reached out to the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. Brandon and I have chatted about this. Are they interested in assisting in this in some way in defining and developing careers in the hospitality business? There'll be a lot more of ideas on the table, but I'm eager to move forward in the next phase of this organization's life. Having said that, let's move into our agenda today. There's things not on the agenda we'll have to add, some for information purposes, I think some for action. With that, because of my lateness to this, my papers are all over the place, but the first item on the agenda must be minutes from the last meeting. So I'll ask Paul to ask for comments, suggestions on that.
I'd like to make a motion that we accept the minutes of the April meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. The minutes are accepted as distributed. Monthly finance report. We're going to touch on this again later, a specific item on in the agenda. Phil, are there anything unique things do we need to you need to point out for us before we take a motion for this?
No, Chairman Rasner. This is a pretty typical report. No major changes.
I picked up one thing that Brandon and I chatted about, and it is now in front of you. Rental of the CAS warehouse, a $1,000 item. I believe we had to correct Redburn on, they owe us more than that per month. And there was some confusion on it, but they've acknowledged that their next payment, they'll pay $3,000. Am I correct, Brenda?
Correct. So they had an overpayment from last year to the tune of $3,000 because we gave them a break during the summer for COVID. So they they paid January and February, did not pay March to make up for that overage. And then they sent a check for $1,000 twice. So we're technically $1,000 behind, and they will make that up in June.
Good. Thank you. Anything else? Any questions or observations here? If not, I'll call for a motion to accept the finance report as distributed.
I make that motion.
I second.
And seconded. Is there a second? Christine, thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Old business. Mr. Barrett, Mount Marino update. Again, just to make sure everybody in the room knows exactly what we're talking about here, give us a briefing on what Mount Marino includes and where we're headed towards closing that transaction.
We the HDC has owned a 3.3 acre parcel on Mount Marino that was landlocked, and we have found a buyer for that parcel, and it has gone to contract. And the closing is still scheduled for on or about May 28th.
All right. any questions, observations on that? The sale is to, because it was landlocked, to an owner of property adjoining the parcel. That's correct, Paul?
Yes, it is.
Okay. B, disposition of Montgomery Street property. Before we start on this, the rules under which we operate as a not-for-profit corporation in the state of New York mandates we be as transparent and public as possible in all discussions. It does give two exceptions for going into an executive session. One, if that discussion is regarding a real estate transaction and revealing publicly the details of the transaction may have an effect on the outcome, the board is permitted to hold that discussion in an executive session. The other instance is, and we will encounter this later in our agenda, discussion of salary or compensation for a staff member. We're also permitted to hold that discussion in executive session. Now, those of you board members and members of the public know that we have gone to great lengths not to hold executive sessions because they're misunderstood and not always received in the spirit that we try to live up to with them. So as we discuss Montgomery Street, if we go into an executive session, I would remind board members that what goes on in that may not under any circumstances be discussed outside of that session.
True.
If there's a motion to be made, that will be made when we come out of the executive session. The reason of a confidentiality is the chance of damaging the prospect of sale or transaction. So with that, a bit of background on where we're at now on Montgomery Street, i.e. well-known everywhere around town about the CAS parcels. So bear with me a bit to back up here. The principal part of this land came to the Hudson Development Corporation 11 years ago in 2020. this was an agreement between the owner of the property, who had fallen behind in their real estate taxes, and the city of Hudson and the Hudson Development Corporation. The land came to us, which, being a 501c3 organization, provided a tax break for the owner. And in turn for that, the Hudson Development Corporation made them whole with the city and paid the taxes. So it has now been 11 years since this came to us off the tax rolls. Just noted as it stands now as vacant property, the taxes on it, about something shy of $11,000 a year as it stands now. The Hudson Development Corporation has gone through a lot of discussions about this. Walked through two RFPs, the most recent receiving attention of three firms, none of which were selected, which permitted us, in an agreement with the state, to then enter into selling it by a negotiated transaction. We were able to set aside the requirement for a bid, which we had received in our RFPs, and that then cleared the path to meet with interested parties in the last year, which of course has been complex because we have masks, we can't sit down face to face, etc. Nonetheless, during the past year, myself, on occasion other board members, met with interested parties. That list is now 8 or 9 firms or individuals that we've talked with about this property. It's fair to say all those people were quite serious. We didn't have tire kickers in that. Everybody was quite serious and was respectful of our process. We tried to be that same way of theirs. That brings us to today. We have, let me back up to the beginning of the year. In a discussion with this board, before we had it appraised, the board, on the advice of our experienced realtors on the board, said, as we go into a negotiated transaction, the minimum price will be $2 million. We completed survey, we completed title search, and we had an appraisal. And the appraisal came in at $2.3 million. We now have in front of us two serious offers. Those offers exceed your minimum price for the property. They are both cash offers. They are both no contingency offers. One of those offers came to us less than 24 hours ago. So to completely study it, discuss it with our counsel, and bring it to you with a recommendation would be unfair to you, be unfair to the bidder. It needs deeper thought than 24 hours. Nonetheless, these are very, very similar offers. I would advise you that as we go forward on this, and able to develop analysis of both, get documents out to you, this is going to move quickly at this point. When somebody comes to you and says, I have the cash to buy this, here's where we're going to go, there's no reason for us to delay this. I'm going to stop at that moment. Are there questions that you have of us before I go a bit further? It's been, as you might suspect, awkward, because it requires, in some instances, me making 5 or 6 phone calls. What do you think? Where do you go with this? How do you think? But we're ready now to sit down and study these two things in depth and come back to the board very promptly. I would like to sit down with both of the bidders yet this week and know that we can come to the board promptly within a week from today. It's a tall order, but we've owned this for 11 years and we have people that see a vision for the city with it. So let me stop there. Questions, observations, more information that I can provide for you. Nothing. Is silence golden?
Mr. Chairman, are we going to discuss these offers in executive session today?
I'm sorry, Steve. I have a hard time hearing you through this bizarre connection I've got set up. Can you repeat your question, please?
Are we going to discuss these two offers in executive session today?
We can do that. I think the only reason to do that right now is if the board feels they want to know the exact cash offers. That would require an executive session.
All right. Well, that aside, at the last meeting, I believe let me go back. I take it that it's your opinion based on advice that we do not need to go through a bid process first for the CAS property because we did that several years ago. Is that correct?
That's correct. And Brenda, you might want to have that conversation with the State Department. Am I correct, Brenda?
Yeah. So
do we have something in writing from them?
Not yet. The next step of the process would be once the board decides that they are accepting a particular offer that we have on the table, I will need to then do a public notice to the authority's budget office with information about the negotiated sale. And then they will come back to us and let us know whether or not that's approved or not. And all the research and all the people that I've spoken to at ABO thus far have indicated that the process is pretty streamlined. So it will, we'll have a determination very quickly.
Because it's my impression, and I could be wrong, I haven't looked at it for a while, that to do a negotiated sale, you first needed to go through a bid process and then determine it didn't work or you didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And so we haven't done that except several years ago. So my concern is that having done that first step is stale because it was too long ago. And so that particular point, assuming I'm correct as to the law, I think we should have a written statement from the authorities that you satisfied that first step of the process.
Someone else that went through this process, and I don't have it at my fingertips, but we got a letter from their attorney in this regard.
Okay.
I would say it wasn't his official opinion, but it was his experience on this. But your point is well taken. They're going to get to decide when we go to them with an offer, whether that qualifies or not.
Right.
And generally what we're hearing verbally from their staff is it does.
Right. So when I send the notice to ABO, this language is all included in there. They can't make a determination until they have the full scope. And because the board hasn't made a determination whether or not they're going to accept an offer, yet. I can't take it to ABO until we have the whole thing together.
Okay, well, it would be nice to at least have something orally from them that we're not going to be knocked out of the box because we haven't satisfied the first step to the extent that's a requirement because it was too long ago. That's a threshold point that'd be nice to get past, but that's my opinion.
It's a good question. It's a good question.
It's not hard to ask them that and have them focus on it.
Right.
And maybe they have a different interpretation of the law. You don't have to do that. Or they say it's fine. But I'm concerned about that point.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I see Seth has his hand raised. Seth has his hand raised.
Seth, thank you. Because I don't know who the parties are who have come to the table, I have to ask this question. And I don't know if you can answer it or not, but there's been interest expressed about the property from this group or groups, Regenesis and Impact. And I'm just wondering if we've heard from them, if we're considering having them present to us what it is they want to do, or are we just going down a path that doesn't include bringing them to the table?
Brenda and I met with them week before last, Brenda?
Correct.
At the site with the two principals.
And we're talking about Impact and Regenerous, just to make sure everybody was clear.
Right. So, cut to the chase, they have no interest in purchasing this property. It's not what they're about. We just cut to the chase and said, will you become a bidder? No. What's your role here? They described their role, my words, not theirs, consultants to help the seller process the whole thing through the community to get community buy-in to what you're going to do. And they indicated they've had success with that elsewhere. Really, that's kind of where we left it. He said, you're seeking buyers right now. That's not what we are. And clearly that then entered them into the process. Somebody gets to pay that fee and time, no less than 6 months, maybe a year. That's kind of how we left it. We enjoyed the meeting. We talked about other places that they've worked successfully. It would appear that their strength is taking languishing, almost unusable property for cities that's worth nothing on the books and making it of value. And they've done that successfully elsewhere. This is not worth nothing on the books. It's a whole different story.
They were. I mean, I really appreciate the approach that they're taking, and you know, and speaking with them directly and how they go about doing development in this way. We also, you know, I have no problem, you know, allowing them to be partners with potentially whoever is purchasing, you know, our properties or other projects in town. I think that, you know, what they do definitely could have a place in Hudson. It's just at this point in the game, I think that because they're not in the business of actually purchasing anything, they're like middlemen, almost consultants, that it wasn't appropriate. But
okay,
they can't with something else.
I just wanted to know everything you've said, and just, you know, I still have a question in my head. Is there, if it's not them, is there someone like them who can help us to make the decision, who know things that maybe we're not considering?
I mean, you know, it's easy to go into this talking about highest bidder, you know, talking about even a sketch of a plan that they may have. But, you know, none of us are developers and none of us bring that kind of experience to the table. So it's just, you know, I would hate for us to go ahead without, and I have, you know, no particular interest in it being them, but, you know, I've always thought that, geez, why can't we get some really good consulting to help us know how to go about this? So I'll just leave it at that.
Seth, if it assists you, when we put one or both of the packages that are in front of us in front of the board, you're going to learn an awful lot more. They simply haven't written a thing that says, here's a blank check, countersign it, we're underway. Some of these are a very detailed presentation. So your point is very well taken here. I understand that. We have to proceed carefully.
Bob, Mary has her hand raised.
I'm sorry, Paul.
Mary has a question.
Yes.
Thank you, Paul. It's really two points of information because I'm new and don't have all the background. So the first is just generic description for the property. Does it have a land use code now and its zoning, and will the sale affect those? Will they change from what they are now with either bidder or either one? And then the second question is, how is the property being marketed?
Second question first. Basically, it's been marketed by outreach to people in this industry, to developers, to investors, and that has in some ways triggered them to tell others. As recently as the weekend, a connection through a board member, through a mutual friend, had me talking with a developer in Philadelphia. That didn't come to anything. That's generally how it's done. In all the way in the beginning of the process, Nick and I met with a commercial real estate agency. So what we have now of the 8 or 9 people that we've met with, for the most part, they've come to us directly. We have not employed an agent to market this for us. We know the zoning of it. That's been given to the any prospective buyer that looked it up. We know that, for example, one prospective buyer had a contingency that said we must be able to put 5-story buildings on it. It's zoned at 4 stories. So they know what they would do would have to require higher. And currently it's acceptable for mixed-use development. Would that be a fair statement, Branda?
Right. The zoning right now is residential special commercial 2, and that zoning was changed whenever the WIC went through their planning board process. So that's a new designation that was a little bit unclear. I did speak to Craig Haig about that because although the legislation is on the books for residential special commercial 2, it's not actually on the zoning map, so it's a little bit confusing. So if there's, of course, through the normal process, whatever, you know, the potential buyer has intended for this parcel, they're going to have to go through all the planning board, all the different things, and make sure that the zoning is applicable, because at this point, whatever is going in there, it's a whole new structure. So it's got to go through the whole process anyway. So there may be zoning changes, but the residential special commercial is pretty broad.
Steve Dunn has his hand up, and so do some members of the public, and the members of the public have to be reminded that They'll have to wait for public comment at the end of the meeting. And Steve, you're on.
Yeah. Assuming we have two offers that have no contingencies, except ministerial ones, but certainly no contingencies on getting new entitlements and so on and so forth, inspection of the property, soil testing, all that stuff. Assuming that's the case, I'm a little confused why we don't go through the bid process. We say this property, we want to sell. Here's the contract that you would sign to buy it, and it must be a all cash offer, and have it go out to bid with the minimum price set at whatever we deem appropriate, whether it's $2 million or $2.3 million or whatever it is. So maybe it's premature to really evaluate that till we see these other offers, but I don't see the downside of that.
It's an option we could do, Steve. We could still do that.
I suppose, thinking out loud, it's possible, but I would tend to doubt it, that these offers might somehow go away. But I think for putting aside what the legal requirement is, which I have a concern about as discussed, I don't see the downside of going through that process. Okay. And I think it would give more confidence to the community that, you know, we're letting everybody have a crack at it. And as again, it's made a bit simpler and cleaner if we're talking about all cash offers with no contingency.
Correct.
It could be a pretty solid process. You say, if you get the bid, you're going to sign this contract. That's otherwise your bid won't be accepted. And we circulate that. Okay, I said my piece. Thank you.
Bob, Seth has a question. Seth?
So just this may, you know, be an add on to what Steve just said, if I understood Steve correctly, or maybe I didn't. And it also goes back again to Empath and Regenesis, just something they said, not that I think that they're the ones that need necessarily to do this. But in the context of the history of the HDC's attempt to sell the property, you know, there was this one aspect, which I guess either Bob or Brandon said, that they would take us, Hudson, through some kind of community buy-in process, which, as we all know, is what kind of killed the whole process a few years ago, because we didn't do that. And we were, this is before my time, but, you know, I think the historical record shows that it didn't help that whatever really happened, that there was a perception of there not being a community buy-in to the process. So I'm just wondering, and Steve, again, maybe this is part of what you were saying, if we should think and try to figure out a way to include some kind of, now, look, we own the property. We know that we can turn around tomorrow and, you know, whatever rules are, sell it and whatever. We're done with it. And that's nice and clean. But there's also the responsibility to the city and smart politics in the sense of wanting to do something that will be supported and that won't just wind up like last time coming around to bite us in the you know what.
So, Seth, a couple of comments here. Your direction of this came up in a meeting I had with Brandon and I had a week or two ago with the city, with the mayor and the mayor's aide, the treasurer, and the president of Common Council. And to paraphrase, it says, what is somebody going to do We need to know that first. And my response then was, well, what is the measuring stick? How is what they're proposing going to be measured? In lack of a city comprehensive plan or in a riverfront development, then the measuring stick wanders all over the place and it's kind of shoot from the hip. Well, we don't like that. Well, wait a second. My comment at that point is, let's assume we sell it to one of these people. The measuring stick now is they must go through the public process. They must convince the planning board. And certainly the community turns out for the planning board and has public comment there. Rather than vetting this first with no measuring stick, it's tantamount to saying, I see your house is for sale. Can you tell me who you're going to sell it to before you do that? It's way out of line. We know you can't do that.
Nonsense.
So I'm concerned that it doesn't go down that road. What they're going to do or plan to do will need community support. You're absolutely right. But I think the appropriate place for that is when they roll out their plans and say, we now have to take this through the administrative process for the city. And that's the time that people can say, I like it, I don't like it. Can you change it to this? Are you willing to change it to that? It should help the listeners here to know both proposals are from local people. Both are come to us locally. I see that as a significant plus. They are here. They are here, business people in this city. So I hear what you're saying. I'm just not sure when to insert it into the process most productively.
Hey, Bob, Phil has his hand raised. And again, I just want to remind there's some members of the public. They're going to have to wait until the public comment portion of the meeting. Phil, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Paul. I just want to respond. Maybe Seth mentioned it. The thought that that these offers were in fact quite durable, or put another way, not fragile and not immediately time sensitive. I actually don't believe that's true. Certainly on one or another of them, there are definitely inferences of time consciousness. And that may be an understatement. And I don't think that, that would be my first comment. Second comment, concur with what the chairman said, but I want to point out something that's sort of gotten skipped over, and I'm not taking anything away from the seriousness of the current conversation. I don't know that any of us actually anticipated how successful this process would be. When we got the assessment at $2.3 million, there were more than a few folks who are pretty knowledgeable in town who said, good luck on that, i.e. that's not going to happen. You'll never even get close to it. When we set the minimum bar at $2 million, there were folks who said, maybe you should open it up. That's not realistic. So wherever we end up and whatever the next steps are in the process, and I have no expertise in this and defer to other folks, I do want to congratulate the chairman and the executive director who've been carrying a lot of weight on this for a pretty long period of time. Someone had asked about marketing. There is a brochure. We have done a video. We've had many, many conversations with many, many people. It ain't nothing. And I'm kind of happy right now that the people we're talking to who are most engaged as buyers are people who've demonstrated knowledge of, consciousness of, and commitment to our little space in the world. I'm not sure it's going to get much better. That's my comment.
Who are they?
Thank you, Phil. A couple parallel things here that are worth at least putting on the table are recent developments around this property. 10 days ago or so, Brandon and I met, as I mentioned, with the mayor and with President of Common Council and the state treasurer, and it indicated to them that we had a buyer that was also interested in purchasing another parcel of city land. And they specifically pointed to the Dunn Warehouse property. It's something like just under 1.5 acres, I think. And they asked us if we might make that inquiry of the city, if that was possible, was the city willing to consider that? And we had a good give and take meeting, 45 minutes or so. And I think I summarized in saying I asked the city not for a decision, but would they prepare to have that discussion by getting an appraisal for that property and perhaps a title search? And either the Tom or Mayor, both of you were there. I think you just felt uncomfortable making that step at this point. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I would say so. Without us knowing, you know, the use, I wouldn't be comfortable in taking that step.
Yeah, and that's where we hit kind of a crossroads of, since there's no measuring stick, there's no plan. I can see the client's discomfort with that. Nonetheless, that's where we left that. So that's still a discussionable thing on the table here. And secondly, not part of that meeting, but is a real estate transaction immediately adjacent to this property? And I need some help on this, Tom, perhaps. It's our understanding from at least Common Council records or your disposition of property committee that the city's considering selling a portion of Montgomery Street. Am I correct on that? Is that still a possible sale?
Yes, it is. Yes, did you hear me?
I'm not getting the audio on that. Tom, is that still a possible sale?
Yes, it is.
Can somebody else respond? I'm getting very mushy audio from Tom at this end.
He said yes.
It is. Yes.
So how is that sale going to be committed? How is that going to be done? And are adjacent property owners being approached as prospective buyers on it? In other words, have you fulfilled the first step yet on bids on it?
We're following the procedure. We're at the point where it has to be appraised.
So will, for example, will the HDC be approached as approach a neighbor as a prospective possible buyer of it?
They'll be allowed to bid, certainly.
It will be an out-to-bid project.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Good. Okay. And do you have any idea the timing of that now?
We're just waiting for the appraisal.
Okay. Okay. Is there a source that we can go to get the survey of exactly what's being sold?
City website.
The city's website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any questions regarding that? Unless I'm mistaken, this is the end piece of Montgomery Street as it cuts behind the Crew House remains the property of CSX. Is that correct, Tom?
Yes, it is the property immediately behind the two buildings east of kitties owned by Ben Fain.
Got it. Okay. Okay. So that would bring it up to.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I understand. It's a short piece of land, as I understand it, short piece of the street. Any questions about that?
Well, Nick has had his hand up as well.
So I don't see that. So thanks for bringing that to my attention.
Just as a comment too, and I think it was Seth's observation. I throughout this entire process, I think that we have tried. I think HDC has tried to be as sensitive and as concerned and as forward-looking in its marketing, or as to who we would even bring into the conversation to purchase the Montgomery Street property, that I don't think it's lost on any members of the board how important it is. And I just want to reassure the other members of the board, Seth, and the public, that if anybody's being spoken to, we would hope that they would do something more than just pay lip service to our concerns and our vision for the city. And that I think whoever is going to purchase this from us, the two local, if it's these two or whoever, I think that they will reflect our community as a whole in their attitude and hope and development of the project. So it's not to think that we would sell it to some soulless developer. I would like to think that they had that they were in sync with us and the way we think how we're going to go forward as a city and a community. So just as a reassurance there. That's all.
A chat question. When is the board going to get more specifics on these offers? In fairness to both of the people who have offers in front of us, the immediate next steps is to sit down with them. I've been in contact with both of them this morning, and we'll be in contact with both of them after our meeting to sit down and say, okay, we understand the offer. We have questions here. We have observations here. So ultimately, I will want to gather the officers in an executive session meeting and be able to come to you with saying, here are our recommendations based upon what we have in front of us. Prior to that, the next time we all meet, you're going to get a raft of papers about this that are going to take some time for you to work through. The easiest part, of course, is what's the offer? What's the cash offer? Both of these are substantial cash offers. Beyond that, in fairness, again, to both the prospective buyers and the board, we're just not ready to do that yet. It wouldn't be productive at this point.
Steve has his hand up.
Steve.
These two offers, are they in the form of letters of intent?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Both, of course, if we accepted, if the price, purchase price was accepted, it would then require development of a purchase slash sale contract that addressed the concerns of either party. Signing this would mean we agree to go into discussions with council to develop a contract.
Okay, and I assume that we would be careful if we signed, that's a big if, signed a letter of intent that it wouldn't create some legal duty that would get us into trouble.
By its very nature, a letter of intent isn't binding. So how would that get us in trouble?
Well, Crystal, because it has, if it doesn't say clearly, this is not a legally binding contract.
So they both say that.
No, there will be no legal duties or rights of either party unless and until a formal purchase and sale agreement is signed.
Yep, that's the language in both the offers.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Or maybe not exactly that, but they both present that. Anything else on these? If I can move your attention to offshore. The next thing we're looking at is a large parcel of land we own, 14 acres, underwater. And we start now researching how usable is that, who would be interested parties in it, and what's the value of it. I've talked with the chair of our real estate committee about it. Brandon and I have chatted about it a bit. There's people doing very interesting things underwater down near the city. And we're going to examine that. It's a large holding, our largest holding. More of that to come. Is there anything else on Montgomery Street Montgomery Street parcel sale that we need to go over, or are you comfortable leaving this agenda item at this point?
I do have a question from the public.
Not until the end, when the public comment.
We're going to final question, and I'm not sure the answer to this. Do the lots appear on Zillow? I don't know. Paul, do you know if they got up on Zillow, this parcel?
I'm not aware they did.
Oh.
I didn't put them up.
Okay. All right.
What lots?
Thank you. Questions, observations. Thank you for a good discussion. We will be back to you very promptly on this. I am positive this will require board meeting or meetings prior to our next scheduled meeting. We're ready to move along on this. And I so appreciate all of your flexibility on that. Paul, the narrow parcel north of the dog park, our Space Needle parcel, it's still hanging up in the air someplace. Am I correct?
Yes, we've kind of stumped the title search company. They still have to do more research on that.
Okay.
And we can't do a survey until we determine the exact location of the parcel.
Okay. And who owns it?
And who owns it?
All right. A breath of fresh air here. Let's move on from real estate. Bylaws revisions. Paul and Martha have soldiered on with this for a long time, and we're kind of doing it in bites rather than sitting down to the whole thing at once. So I'll leave this discussion over to Paul and Martha on what their recommendations are before us today.
And I think we've come in under the finish line, Bob, with these two recommended changes today. The board did receive our suggested changes in advance. One is on staggered terms, office terms, and the other is on duty of loyalty. And again, staggered terms was Martha's sharp eye. So under Article 2, Board of Directors, Section 2, Paragraph 2, we're recommending adding sentence number 3. And the reason for staggered terms is it really ensures that there's always fresh talent coming onto the board. And it also prevents no more than half of the boards from their term expiring all at once. So for example, in 2 or 3 years, we have like say 5 board members whose terms are all up at the same time. So we really have to start looking forward to make sure that we don't find ourselves in that situation. So the sentence we're recommending that we add in is that directors shall serve staggered terms of 2, 3, or 4 years to be determined at the time of nomination by the governance committee and as voted upon by the current directors. All terms shall commence on May 1st. So I am going to make a motion that we accept these changes as I've just read them to you and as you received in print to Article 2, Board of Directors, Section 2.
So a motion is made to accept what's presented on your screen. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All those in favor?
After a motion second, the next item is a discussion. And I actually submitted a revised text about an hour ago.
Yep. I'm sorry, because Steve was talking there. Did we get an all in favor?
On that section, we did all in favor. So aye. Are there any opposed to that section?
Mr. Chairman, there is a need for discussion first.
I'm sorry.
I actually read it, and I didn't think it worked mechanically. And so I rewrote it, and I request that we discuss.
Wait, are you talking about the first one? I wanted clarification about the first one to make sure that we had an all in favor of the first change, and then the second one that you had questions about.
The one I have questions about is the staggered term.
Okay.
Isn't that what we're...
Yes, yes.
So that's what my language is dealing with. I don't think, in my opinion, the way it's written works mechanically.
Where is his language?
Yeah, I didn't... Steve, I'm unaware of what you are recommending.
Well, I sent a revised text to Brenda and to all of you, albeit an hour ago, so I'm not casting aspersions anyone that they haven't read it, but perhaps Brenda could put it up on the screen what I sent.
Okay. I thought yours was for the second one, not for the first one. That's why.
What is the second one?
Loyalty, duty of loyalty.
Oh, no, I don't have a problem with that.
All right, here is Steve's language. Can you see it?
No.
Okay, hold on. On Memento. I'll put it here at the top. So this is the language that Steve wanted. Upon my reading of it, it appears that it is just cleaned up. Do you want me to read it aloud and make it easier for everybody?
Yes.
Okay. The other director shall serve staggered terms of 2, 3, or 4 years to be determined at the time of nomination by the governance committee and as voted upon by the current directors. All terms shall commence on May 1st. The terms of existing directors shall be extended to the May 1st, which follows the date of the current expiration of their term. The terms of directors may be renewable for one additional term. The determination of the number of non-ex officio director positions that serve 2, 3, and 4 year terms respectively shall be calculated pursuant to the formula set forth in the following sentence. The number of authorized non-ex officio directors shall be reduced to the nearest whole number that is divisible by 3, and 1/3 of such number shall have 3 year term, 1/3 of such number shall have a 4 year term, and the balance of such directors shall have a 2 year term.
Regarding bringing everyone up to like the May 1st, how I thought we would proceed with that is as terms came up, that the board would actually take a vote to extend certain board members' terms by however many months, that would bring us to May 1st. I didn't know that we necessarily had to put that in the bylaws, but I guess it's okay.
Can I explain why I wrote what I did at this time?
Sure.
Okay. First, by the way, there was a typo as well I noted. It says, in addition, the ex officio three directors. It was a typo in the existing bylaws. It was carried over. That three should be deleted.
Okay.
That's not in this text. It was in my email. So that typo, that three digit should be removed. In point of fact, there are two ex officio.
Gotcha.
Okay, so that's minor.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. So here's the thing. We've got, first, to have a staggered term concept, you got to set forth the number of seats that are 2, 3, and 4 years, respectively. So it carries forward. If you, on an ad hoc basis, say, okay, Steve's a jerk, we're going to give him 2 years, and Paul is great, we're going to give him 4, the staggered concept is going to fall apart. So you need slots that are labeled 2, 3, and 4 years. And at the time of the election, the governing committee can determine what slots are what, you know, one time, and then I'll carry forward. So you have a staggered term structure that carries forward. That's point number one. Point number two, you need a transition concept. And that means that, you know, all terms expire on May 1, and that keeps the staggered structure appropriate, and you have that in there. But with the exception of a couple of directors, like it's either 2 or 3, the terms of everybody expire, I believe, on
March,
something like that.
Yeah.
So for those, the bulk of the directors, we just extend their terms to May.
Yes.
Because that's when the new term starts up. And then there's a couple, there's one that ends in June or something. So that term would be extended for 8 or 9 months or something. So everybody's term now ends on a May 1st. So for most of us, it'll be a minor extension. For 2 or 3, it'll be a more substantial one. And that way, you've got everything in sync. So I don't think the existing language works mechanically, and it's ambiguous, and it doesn't preserve the staggered structure going forward, and it needs transition provisions. And that's what I attempted to do here. I do notice, I shall have A3, shall have A4, and no, I guess it's correct. Okay, so that's my suggestion to carry out what I think the intent was in writing it, as to which I have no objection and understand. This actually carries out the intent without ambiguity and confusion going forward.
Except for the ex officio members.
Yeah.
Well, the ex officio members, they serve as long as they're in office. So yeah. None of this applies to them.
That's true for the elected ex officio members. But if the board decided to bring someone else on as an ex officio member, it should be addressed as to term or why they would bring them on. It's accurate because the only ex officio members now, their term with our board is linked to their elected office. But it's possible to have other ex officio members.
That would not be have their term linked to their office?
That's correct.
Right.
Yeah, let me make a suggestion.
Okay, well, then we'd have to rewrite this to contemplate that, or we could wait and lessen until we decide to have more ex officio members by a vote and then revise this again. Let me just add one final point, which is we have 13 non-ex officio director slots. though, the way this formula works, to see which slots have which terms, you reduce it to 12, the next whole number down, divide by 3, that's 4. So 4 of the slots would have a 3-year term, 4 of the slots would have a 4-year term, and the balance, which happens to be 5, would have a 2-year term. So that's how that language works with what. So it dovetails to whatever the number of non-ex officio certainly 13, but we could increase it to 15. We can increase it to a number or decrease. But this formula would always work no matter what.
Okay, I want to make a suggestion here. Stephen, due respect for what you're suggesting, if it came in an hour before the meeting and the looks on some of the faces are still kind of, I want to table this section of this to the next meeting so we can get a grasp of it better.
Fair enough, it's complicated, but it has to be complicated to work.
There's other things that I think still Martha and Paul want to suggest. So if it's acceptable to you, let's table this recommendation of the bylaws and for the next meeting. Is that acceptable, Paul and Martha? Yeah. You okay with that?
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, right. Sorry to be a pest, but that's why I'm here.
Okay, and just before we go out of that, I think Mary has a question. Mary?
It's been tabled.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All righty. Thank you. All right. The next recommended change has to deal with duty of loyalty. I mean, this is in our bylaws already. We have already all agreed to this. All we're recommending is a one-word change from the word corporation to director. So duty of loyalty, Article 9, Section 1, currently starts with no officer or corporation shall engage in. We're recommending that we make that change to read no director or officer shall engage in or condone any conduct that is disloyal, etc. So I would like to make a motion that we accept the revised language in duty of loyalty as it was presented to you and as I just read it to the board.
The motion made regarding duty of loyalty language. Is there a second?
I second that.
Motion seconded. Is there a discussion?
There is. Mary has would like to ask a question.
No, I don't. The hand doesn't come down.
Okay. I lowered
you
it for
answer
you.
It.
Okay.
Yeah.
I lowered it. Okay.
Thank you.
So,
okay. Yeah.
Made and seconded. Is there a discussion? No discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul and Martha. This kind of thing can be a thankless task. Let it be known it's not thankless here. Thank you so much. Next, for whatever it's worth, I'm still having trouble with my connection. Are you hearing me?
Yes.
Okay. Because I've lost my video connection with you. there's two items left here before we go to public comment. And the very first item, compensation committee, requires us to go to an executive session. Introducing that, before we do that, about 6 weeks ago, I met with our executive director and asked Brenda a simple question. When was the last time somebody reviewed your compensation and did a performance review? Well, that had really never happened with an employee that's been with us for 7 years. So I set out to correct that. I asked three board members to consider what our options were. And we did a performance review. When you sit down to realize this, realize our executive director is doing way more than we realize she's doing. So that came around to compensation committee. So to discuss that, I'd accept a motion for us to first go into an executive session, and then if that motion carries, ask for Branda to step out of the room. And then Branda, when we're finished, I will text you to come back into the room. Does that work?
Yeah, I can put our members of the public, once you take your motion to go into executive session, I will move members of the public into the waiting room. And then I made Paul a host as well, so he can remove me and then let me back in later.
And Branda, how do I remove you?
I'll remove myself.
Okay.
So if you look down,
I will let you back. I'll let you back in. Yes.
Yeah. If you look down at the bottom of your screen where it has participants, if you click on that, it brings the sidebar up where you should be able to see and let people in and out.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So, all right. I'm depending on someone else for this because again, I've lost the video on this. So a motion to go into an executive session to discuss compensation review for our executive director. You'll hear that
motion, Bob. Make that motion.
Motion made. Is there a second?
I second it.
And seconded. So if we can now move to the executive session, and again, someone who can see the screen can tell me when that's in effect and members of the public are moved into another room.
We need to have a vote. We didn't have a vote.
I'm sorry. All those in favor of moving to executive session?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. And again, if someone can advise me from their screen when we're in, it'll be helpful.
1 second, I'm putting people in the waiting room.
Thank you.
I'm just double checking here. 1 second. Okay.
All right. Okay. So, Branda came into this organization's employ 7 years ago. I'm giving you information that I asked Phil and Martha and Christine to look at. So I've spent time with each of them discussing this. They've connected back and forth. And here's what I gave them, and here's what bubbled out of that. She started with us 7 years ago as an employee, not a contractor, at $30 per hour. And that moved along at that level until about halfway through her employment with us. And the decision was made to increase her.
The recording has stopped.
I'm sorry?